Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I wonder if there was ever a time when you didn't have to worry about being abducted. Was there ever a time when you could walk down the street alone and not look over your shoulder to see if you were being followed? Was there a time when you didn't have to be cautious that concerned citizen helping you fix a flat tire wasn't actually luring you into a trap to abduct you? Maybe it's because I am me, but I always check over my shoulder, am wary of strangers, and avoid being out alone after dark when possible. At 30 years old, I try to think back and remember, when did I become like this? I mean, Allison and I are both overcautious people. I remember in college being astounded that my friends would go drinking with people they didn't know. I would look on and wonder as young college students would walk across town after dark for food. No matter how much I wanted to let go of my fear, I was never able to. Surely, I thought, as I grew older, I would be brave. But honestly, I'm still the same. Running to the mailbox after dark, calling Anthony when I leave work so I don't have to walk to my car alone, and I really don't think I'll ever change. Allison and I joke about being rule followers and party poopers, but some traits are just embedded in us. Today, we'll be talking about a fun-loving, adventure-seeking 30-year-old. When she disappeared without a trace, evidence and theories were lacking. Despite being missing since 1990, her family continues to fight for her and hope that one day they'll find all the answers that this case has. This is the case of Paige Rynkowski.
Coffee and Cases, where we like our coffee hot and our cases cold. My name is Allison Williams.
And my name is Maggie Dameron. We will be telling stories each week in the hopes that someone out there with any information concerning the cases will take those tips to law enforcement so justice and closure can be brought to these families. With each case, we encourage you to continue in the conversation on our Facebook page, Coffee and Cases Podcast, because, as we all know, conversation helps to keep the missing person in the public consciousness, helping keep their memories alive. So sit back, sip your coffee, and listen to what's brewing this week. All right, Allison, we have been saying all year, and I know that we're not really that far into 2021.
So we've been saying for 18 days.
that this is the year of the sleuth hound. And today I'm calling on all of our Michigan sleuth hounds to help us solve one of Michigan's longest running cold cases.
Wow.
I know.
I know they can do it too, so.
Paige's case, while actually it was very hard to research, really pulled at my heartstrings this week because I saw myself in Paige, and I think like you kind of will too. Mm-hmm. So Paige was 30, and so I'm 30 now. Paige was 30 the year I was born, but that's besides the point.
Right.
And at the time of her disappearance, she was a substitute teacher.
Another connection.
Yeah. And I actually, you know, subbed before I full-time started teaching, and respect to substitute teachers because it is hard. So I really felt that I owed it to Paige to talk about her case today. Mm-hmm. Paige was last seen on May 24th, 1990. So she was engaged to be married that November, and her fiancé lived in Lansing, Michigan.
Okay.
Paige was working at a preschool. She was an aide there, and she was also a substitute teacher while she pursued a degree in early childhood development. So, like, initially, I'm like, you go, Paige, because she's 30
yeah.
and is still getting this degree.
Right.
So that's great. I read in several articles that she actually had plans to work with deaf students.
Oh, that's great.
Which is an even, like, I think, even more special of a calling.
Yeah, more admirable.
According to True Crime Files, in addition to mother Artis and father Carl, she had three sisters, Tammy, Michelle, and Cheryl. Her family fondly remembers her love of skateboarding, singing, and swimming, and they describe her as a tomboy with a bubbly personality.
So, perfect mix of every quality.
I think so too. And from the research that I did, I could tell that Paige was extremely close to her family. Like when we get on in the story, you're going to see like her mom took it upon herself to like be that constant reminding force to the police, like, hey, don't forget about my daughter, like, you know, just to keep it kind of fresh. Uh-huh. And then after her mom passed away, Paige's sister actually took up that same calling to be like the voice for Paige. The day that Paige disappeared, she had just dropped her mom off at the Detroit Metro Airport. And since that obviously wasn't an all-day event, Paige had plans to meet a friend for lunch that afternoon in the park.
Right. So. Which would be like us. We're already dressed. So you may as well make the day.
Something.
Yeah, make a day of it.
Especially
see if somebody
when it's
wants
COVID.
To hang out.
Yeah.
I know.
I already put makeup on, so what else can I do today? We know that Paige made it to Canton to eat lunch in the park with her friend. And according to various websites, the lunch was uneventful, just two friends, you know, catching up and having a good time.
Okay.
So after she finishes up, Paige left to go home. And she was actually headed to her fiancé's softball game, and she wanted to make sure her friend remembered that she got to the game on time.
Okay.
So she did have a full day.
Yeah.
The trip from the park to her house would only take about 30 minutes, and like, I guess this just shows like how isolated where I grew up is, but like, hearing that the airport was only 30 minutes away from your house, I could not identify with that growing up.
Yeah.
Like,
it would take you 30 minutes to get to the grocery store or the gas station.
But like 3 hours to get to the airport.
Right.
But according to Wikipedia, and I know we don't like to use Wikipedia, but it is what it is. Paige was seen between 2:30 p.m. and 2:45 at a grocery store that has since closed down on Interstate 275. So we know that she is alive and well around 2:45. While in the store, she bought a beer, and that comes into play a little later.
A single beer?
Yeah, one single beer.
Okay.
And the clerk remembered seeing her because she was wearing, quote, distinctive multicolored loose-fitting flower-patterned pants and a distinctive necklace.
Okay. So I mean, that is something that you would remember.
Yes. Paige heads home after leaving the store. And it's important to point out that the weekend of Paige's disappearance was actually Memorial Day weekend. So the interstate that Paige was traveling on would have had tons of traffic, like, during the time she was traveling.
Okay.
Like, I actually kind of looked it up because I feel like during Memorial Day, like, we travel in Kentucky, but I don't think that it's, like,
it's not
as big as what it is in other places.
Yeah.
Because they made it sound like in Michigan, like, everybody's going north on Memorial Day weekend.
Maybe because, because Memorial Day is May. And so the only reason it's big, like, for our family is that's usually the first weekend we go to the lake. And since you're in Michigan and you've got all the... I'm going to assume that that's what it is. And that's why they would go north to all of, the, like, the lakes and stuff. Because that's usually, like... big day at the lake. Everybody's out there.
I guess that's true because summer started.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. So there's actually like entire forums on TripAdvisor dedicated to like the best time to travel, like during the day, like when you should leave to avoid traffic.
Oh, wow.
And, like,
okay.
All of this.
Yeah, those are things we don't have to worry about here.
And so Paige would have been on the interstate during like a peak travel time because... Okay. That, like, online I read most people are either going to leave, like, really early in the morning to beat the traffic, which they don't, or they're going to leave around the time that we've last seen Paige, like, around 3 or 4.
Okay.
So, it is unsurprising when calls start to come in to the local police station about an abandoned car parked on the side of Interstate 96.
I mean, bound to happen. There's all kinds of traffic.
Flat tires and people are calling. But do remember, this is pre-cell phone.
Oh, okay,
like,
that's right.
I mean, I'm sure people had like mobile phones right. in 1990, but it's not like today.
Right. It was like the size of your car.
Yeah. You carried it in a suitcase. Yeah. So after 6 p.m., and some reports actually say 7:30 p.m., police finally go to check out the car that people have been calling about that's stranded alongside the interstate.
Which I get that. I mean, that's not like a priority.
Also,
I guess.
I'm sure they're super busy. It's
right.
Memorial Day weekend.
Exactly.
So when they arrive, they find an abandoned Oldsmobile. And what I'm going to tell you, Allison, I think you will find it odd that the car was not processed as a crime scene. Like, it blew my mind.
Okay.
And it still baffles current investigators on the case today. So in one article that I read, Lisa Rose Church actually said in this article, today's investigators are quick to note that the original investigators did what they could with the information they had available. However, there were setbacks from the beginning. First, Frayer, who's a member of the Livingston County Sheriff's Department, and he works on like their cold case team, said the spot where investigators found the 1986 silver Oldsmobile that Paige was driving was not processed as a crime scene because at the time it was merely considered an abandoned car and had been tagged as such by an officer.
Okay, so basically they're saying the officer shows up, it's not a priority, the car's on the side of the road, slaps that like orange sticker or whatever color sticker it is on it, and then calls a tow truck. Like,
yes.
They're not looking in it. Because
right.
Why would they think to?
I mean, but yes, like what you're saying,
right.
Yes. But then when I get on,
so
with
they
found the car, they should have been like, this is weird.
Okay.
So he goes on to say, they tow it. We've got a general idea of where the exact scene was, but we're not exactly sure. They didn't photograph the scene or do a crime scene sketch because at the time it was an abandoned car and that's how it was treated. It wasn't until later they knew what they had.
Okay. So you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of Brooklyn Farthing's case and the couch.
Oh, yes.
And he calls and says, I have a fire at my house. The firefighters show up. They put the couch out. You know what I mean? They didn't realize or, like, it didn't click that, oh, my gosh, only the couch is burning. Nothing else is burning, and this house has no electricity in it.
This is weird.
Right. To think, oh, this could be a crime scene. So they treated it like a fire. And, again, I can't blame them, but... In hindsight, then they should have been like, oh my gosh. So I guess something similar is about to go down.
Yes. So when they find the car, it is completely undamaged and the doors are unlocked. Okay. So like immediately I'm like, you know, I would be expecting to roll up and there'd be a flat tire. And like this person has just walked to the nearby exit to call for help and they've left their car there.
Right.
But obviously that's not the case.
So this is perfect working condition.
Yes. Yes. And so like on a more illogical note, I was like, okay, maybe she like had her lipstick out and she dropped it. And so she pulls over so she can get whatever she's dropped.
Okay.
And maybe she had to step out of the car and accidentally locked herself out of the car.
But it's unlocked.
But it's unlocked. So
okay,
that's
can
wrong
I say
too.
Something? Okay,
yeah.
I don't know why I would do this, but I totally would. If I'm leaving my car somewhere, especially if I'm leaving it on the side of the road that's heavily traveled right now, even if I had nothing of value in my car, I would not leave it unlocked.
Yeah, I would lock the door.
Absolutely.
I'd lock the door of my car parked in the driveway of my subdivision.
Yeah. Like, I don't think hot wiring a car is as easy as movies make it look, but I
right.
still wouldn't, like, want to give somebody an opportunity.
Exactly.
Hmm.
So what's even more strange is the fact that Paige's car was idling with the keys still in the ignition.
Okay, no.
Lights and radio on.
No. And they had it towed?
And they towed it.
Okay,
which
yeah.
means they had to
no.
turn the car off.
Yeah. Nope. Nope. See, right there, they should have said,
yes.
okay, there's something wrong.
Because calls came in at, like, what did I say? 3:30?
Yeah.
3:00?
And they didn't get to it until hours later.
Yeah, and it's running by the side of the car.
Mm.
Or the road.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes. So not only is the radio on, lights are on, the beer can is open, and it's like in the cup holder. Her shoes were left in the car. Her purse had her wallet inside, and her wallet was full of money.
And that's
all
still
left
in the car.
Personal papers, all left in the car. But Paige is nowhere.
Okay, yeah, that you're right. They should have come up on this car that's running, looked inside, and they know it's been there for hours.
Right.
Because they're responding to a call that came in hours ago. Have seen that someone's purse with a wallet full of money, and props to all these people who drove by and didn't.
Yeah, good job, good citizens of the world.
Being honest, they should have known that something was wrong.
Or even what
person walks. Run the plates and see who it belongs to and call them.
Well, they do that, and I'll touch on that.
Okay.
But, like, my first thing is, I mean, again, not to be stereotypical of Eastern Kentucky, but I never wear shoes. I go barefoot all the time. I would not, however, go barefoot on the side of the interstate.
No. On pavement. Like,
no.
Like that, yeah.
No. So, unlike many of the cases we cover, where we have tons of theories and tons of evidence, in cases, in Paige's case, we really don't. There are three prevalent theories as to what happened to her. And I thought I would talk briefly about those and then dive into the evidence before we kind of make predictions about what we think has happened on the case. Because I want
That's my favorite part.
I know. So I want us to go in knowing the theories police have and then talk about the evidence.
Okay.
And then we'll give our 2 cents because...
That's what we do.
And it matters.
Right. To us.
Yeah. Officers seem to agree on these three theories. So, did someone she knew somehow get her to stop by the side of the road and they abducted her? Is theory number one.
So, versus just, like, took her somewhere.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because we don't know where she is still.
Exactly.
So, okay. So, someone she knew.
Yes. So, did she stop for someone she knew? Was it a staged, like, accident / disappearance? Why would you leave your car running?
Yeah.
Okay. Did someone impersonate a police officer to get her to stop and abducted her from there?
Now that is an interesting theory.
I know. And I'm going to talk about that theory a little more. So all three of these theories hold some credence. So after we talk about the evidence and like the eyewitness accounts that we have, I'm going to be interested to hear like what you have to say.
Because, I mean, okay, I know I'm jumping ahead
here,
but if she had an open container of alcohol in the car, and maybe if somebody was impersonating an officer, and they just happened to pull her over, and then they're like, prime opportunity, get out of the car, you know, you need to do a sobriety test or whatever, I mean...
It's true, and I hadn't thought about that, but that's a good connection.
Hmm.
So here are things we do know.
Okay.
Paige's car was not investigated until well after 6.
Okay.
Paige was last seen leaving the store around 2:45. So what happened in that chunk of time?
Like 3 hours. That's a lot of time for something to happen.
Yes. According to Cold Case Fowlerville, and I really hope that I'm pronouncing that correctly. Y'all know me with the names. The day witnesses say they saw Paige stopped on the westbound shoulder of I-96 about a half mile from the Fowlerville exit was at 3:30 p.m. So again, like if your car's broken down, you're only half a mile away from an exit, and you're going to know that.
But it wasn't broken down.
Right. So weird.
Okay.
And I feel like if you're meeting a friend, why would you be like, I'll meet you a half a mile away from this exit. Like, why not just meet?
Wait, wasn't she supposed to go to her...
Yes.
Fiance softball game?
Yeah, so she's supposed to be on her way to the softball game.
Hmm.
So this article goes on to say she was spotted speaking with two unidentified African-American males. They were standing near a vehicle with a possible third male nearby. Witnesses say Paige was gesturing and throwing her hands up in the air before one of the men was seen putting his hand on her shoulder. And then I actually read that there were other eyewitnesses that say, like, you can see the man leading Paige away, like, by her elbow. Like, he's pulling her toward his car, like, by her elbow.
Okay.
A motorist saw Paige with this individual at approximately 3:30 p.m. So we know at 3:30 she's alive because she's been seen by the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes concerned because he passes the vehicle in the exact same location, like, several hours later.
All right.
So when police finally arrive on the scene, they're able to determine who the car belonged to because they do, like you said, they ran the tags.
Okay. Good move, finally.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And they are able to figure out that the car belonged to Paige's mother.
All right.
The issue is, and Michelle, remember Paige's sister?
Oh, she took her to the airport.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes. And she tells Dateline, quote, they ran the tags and found out the car belonged to my mother, so they called her home and left a message. The issue is, the mom is at the airport because she flew to Georgia to visit Michelle. So the voicemail sits on her answering machine unheard.
Oh my gosh. For days.
Yeah. For a couple of days, it said.
And, you know, the first 48 hours, that's the most crucial. And now that's going to be gone.
Yes. So Michelle says her and her mother grew concerned when they hadn't heard from Paige since she dropped their mom off at the airport. And in that interview with Dateline, Michelle says, quote, we didn't have cell phones back then. So when we had not heard from Paige, we called her fiance, Steve, and asked him to go check the messages at my mom's house. And she said, again, that to Dateline. And so that is when they finally put the pieces together that Paige is missing.
Oh, okay.
It's when Steve goes to check the voicemail, because then they have the voicemail from the police saying that, you know, we have your car.
Right.
And they don't know where Paige has been. So we know she's been driving. We know the car has been towed.
Right.
We don't know where she's at.
Right. You know what I think is weird about that whole sighting, though? Is I feel like, I mean, unless...
Oh, I hope you say what I think you're going to say.
Well, if... I don't know if I am or not, but if I'm on a busy interstate and somebody's trying to kidnap me, I'm running out in traffic. I'm going to scream, like wave my arms.
Like I will jump out in front of them.
Yeah,
I would rather die than be abducted.
Right.
I would rather get
because you don't know what they're going to do to
you. Yes.
So, yeah, that just doesn't sit right with me.
And there's more that I will have to say about being abducted on the side of the interstate.
Okay.
When we talk about theories. Okay. So it wasn't until police met with Steve that Saturday that they decided to process the car as a crime scene and talk to eyewitnesses and finally investigate Paige as like a missing person.
So I wonder if they were assuming because the car was running, to see the purse in it doesn't make any sense to me.
Right, because if she like needed something and had to walk to the gas station, she would need money.
Because I was going to say maybe they processed it like as if somebody had potentially stolen the car and they'd left it abandoned and then that's why they're calling the owner of the car. But knowing that it was running, which I guess if somebody had stolen it, I don't know if that's called.
But they would have left money in the car.
Right, exactly. So that doesn't fit either.
So according again to that Rose Church article, some eyewitness reports indicate that the second vehicle was parked in front of Paige's car, but the majority of witnesses report seeing it behind Paige's car, which again will be important when we talk about theories.
And again, if somebody's behind me, I'm driving off.
Right. But if it's a police car, it would pull up behind you and not in front of you.
It's true.
So those witnesses report that Paige and the unidentified male were seen standing and talking between two vehicles, which again makes sense if we're jumping the gun, but again makes sense if it is someone impersonating a police officer.
Okay.
So as time has gone on, people have actually described at least 5 different vehicles that they say was like behind Paige's car.
Are they anywhere close, like in terms of what they look like? No. Okay.
One was a white pickup truck.
All right.
A red cargo van. A blue truck that had like an emblem on the side. But the majority of people describe a maroon minivan.
Okay, so at least there's a majority.
Yeah.
But none of those are similar.
I mean, maybe the red cargo van and the maroon minivan.
Maybe.
Police think, though, that people have over time just maybe started confusing cars they saw like abandoned.
With what they saw. Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Police are able to piece together a sort of kind of timeline, and they determined that Paige went missing around 4, so shortly after that motorist reported seeing her at 3:30.
Okay.
With the man and her, like, talking
with
animation
with
the man.
Right, okay.
So, for the purpose of today, since that's what police agree upon, we're going to say that Paige was talking to 2 African-American men near a maroon van.
Okay.
Some eyewitnesses say that the man was leaning over Paige, resting his hand on the van, which is creepy.
Mm, Yeah, that's kind of aggressive.
Yeah. Police are able to determine that this was likely true, though, because, according again to that Rose Church article, police found several fingerprints on the outside of the car. And they have also, which, by the way, none have been identified.
Oh, man. I was going to say, yes, fingerprints. No.
They also have a palm print.
Mm-hmm. So, like, oh, so that makes sense. Yeah.
But again, no match. And in that same article, Freyer, who I quoted earlier, said, quote, "We do have a pretty good set of palm prints that could be left, like someone is leaning on the car. And we have some witnesses who say they might have seen someone actually doing that. That's one of our better pieces of physical evidence. The problem is, some places didn't take palm prints when someone was arrested."
Oh, and, I didn't even think about that, because usually they just take fingerprints.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something that they need to... Do they do it? I don't think I've ever had a palm print done. No. We have to have... Not that we've been arrested. As teachers, we have to register our fingerprints with the state. And yes. So...
And I'm horrible at it.
Oh, I know. They'll, like... You know, because, well, take your nervous, finger in that.
And my hands sweat.
Oh,
and
then
no. The ink won't stick. Like, I'm talking about it. My hands are sweating. And the ink won't stick to my finger. And when I started at my new county, I had to do it twice. Because
you messed up.
The first one, they said they couldn't read them. And so then I had to do them again. And it's horrible. But then when we went to Washington, I think I've said this before.
Oh, when you visited the FBI?
Yeah, and it's like digital now. And I'm like, well, now the FBI has their fingerprints, not that it matters, because I don't commit crimes.
No, we are rule followers, But I've never had my palm print.
No,
but that's interesting, because there have been several cases where I feel like...
That would be...
Yeah.
Crucial.
Maybe that's what we need to start doing everywhere.
I know. That. And that really is it. So we have a few fingerprints, a palm print, and eyewitness accounts.
And fingerprints and palm prints don't match anyone, and eyewitness accounts are, like... notoriously fallible. Yes. Like, they're
so really we have nothing. So I want to talk about the theories behind her disappearance.
All right,
so remember that theory one is that she saw someone she knew, pulled over to speak to them, and was abducted.
Okay,
I find this hard to believe.
I do too,
and I'm going to tell you why. So if I'm being honest, I actually find, like you said, a lot of eyewitness accounts hard to believe,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like our brain is so much smarter than, like, what we give it credit for. Mm-hmm. I think it tricks us a lot of the time. But let's pretend like you are driving down the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go 70 miles per hour on the interstate, especially if there's cars around me that are going the same speed as me.
Right.
I'm doing faster than that. On a holiday weekend, I could only assume people are speeding.
Right.
So if that's the case, Paige is likely driving faster than the allotted speed limit. So how would she have seen someone she knew and somehow communicated to them to pull over?
Yeah.
Because remember, this is pre-cell phone. Unless, like, this person's pretending like they had a flat tire and Paige sees them and pulls over. But again, I just feel like that is hard to orchestrate.
And especially if she has a place to be.
Right.
Like, if she's going to go to the softball game, like, she has a place where she's headed.
Right.
Right? Then it doesn't really make sense, I guess, that she would... I don't know.
And I mean, think about, too, like, how many times have you passed, like, a vehicle and they're changing a tire on the side mm-hmm. of the interstate?
Oh, yeah. It happens
all
the time.
You pass so quickly.
Right.
What do you notice?
It's like it registers in your head that they were changing a tire after you've already passed, too.
So how am I supposed to take time to notice, like...
Oh, that's my friend.
Yeah. She was standing beside a maroon van. He was leaned over her. He was, like, pulling her by the elbow. Like, how do you have enough time to see all that?
Right. Unless there was a lot of traffic.
That's true. Because then, like, they could be going slower even at standstill. Which, if that's the case, and someone's trying to kidnap me... And
again,
still
then
traffic.
You, then you
like
can run in front of their car.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm
you
opening the door, jumping in.
That's right. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
You might have to worry about getting shot when you jump in somebody's car, but not about being hit by the car.
True. So, theory two is the stage disappearance. And this one, I think, makes even less sense.
Yeah.
So, again, and I know I've quoted this article a lot, but she had a lot of good information. The Rose Church article, Freyer said... that this staged incident has, quote, some validity, but that they don't have enough evidence to really support the theory entirely. So,
but why would she's getting married in 6 months. She's close with her mom. She obviously calls her all the time because they were worried when they hadn't heard from her in like the hours after she dropped her mom off at the airport.
That's true.
You know what I mean? And so that just seems...
Well, I think that they said this because of two things. So one, Paige had moved a fairly large sum of money into her checking account. But again, you're getting married, and that's expensive.
Yeah.
Deposits are expensive.
It could have been paying for photography.
Yeah, or the food, right. Or whatever. And it's expensive. Like, I mean, you're dropping $2,000 for flowers.
Yeah. So that to me is totally explainable.
The second thing is that family and friends told investigators that Paige and Steve were actually having some, like, relationship issues around the time that she disappeared. But, like, I don't think there would be any issue that would make me run away.
Yeah, me neither. Like, just end...
Yeah, you're not married. Just break up.
So, okay. Maybe I'm being very... I don't know. I don't know what word I want to use. But has there been a theory that Steve had something to do with it?
Well, Steve actually spoke with police several times, and each time they questioned him, he's cleared of any involvement.
Okay. Okay, because I was thinking, obviously you never want to have to go there to question, and yet that's generally, in terms of crime,
mm-hmm.
who police need to look at first. So that's good to know. So yeah, I don't think there's anything there that indicates that she would want to, like, just run away from her family also. Yeah.
And that she had, like, no major travel plans, no plans to, like, leave the country. So what could have happened to her?
Right.
Which brings us to theory three. And that is that Paige was pulled over by a person impersonating a police officer.
See, I like this theory.
Which is a lot of peace.
Yes. As soon as you said it, I was like, oh.
Yes.
That could be it.
And you're going to say that even more because, according to the Charlie Project, three unsolved abductions slash murders of young women occurred in the late 1980s in the general area from which Paige vanished.
Oh, so pattern.
I know.
Yeah.
So at the same time, there are multiple incidents of people impersonating police officers and showing fake badges to motorists to get them to stop.
Okay.
Which,
well, again.
And that's a fear of mine.
Gives more credence to this theory. But we talked about it. You can call 911. At least I've heard. I've never done it. You can call 911 and you can say, yes, I am on, you know, whatever road. I'm being pulled over by an officer. I just wanted to make sure that it's safe to pull over.
Except mom would be like, I just passed the Burger King and I have no idea right. the name of the road right. that I'm on. I turned left to the Burger King.
Track my phone.
Yeah. Turn my phone on. So, I guess, like you said, this one I think just makes the most sense. And especially when I read that Paige's father actually had law enforcement experience. So she would have, and this was a quote from an article, like, respected the badge.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
I just think this one, it just fits.
And again, if that's kind of what she grew up with, then yeah, there would be like a natural trust.
Yeah.
Of someone who
shows
is an
badge.
Officer.
Yes, 100% agree. So I do want to bring up a few things that happened in this investigation, like directly after and then over the past several years.
Okay.
So again, according to the Rose Church article, about 6 months after Paige disappeared, investigators received a letter with a map enclosed, which I think is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And the letter read, "The information may be a red herring. However, I have recently come into some information about Paige that may or may not be true. I've tried to verify as much of this information as I could and have found many of the details to be true." The author continues to say that the map is a supposed route taken by her abductors, and the letter ends unsigned, saying, "Thank you for your attention to this."
Okay, so which tells me, in my mind, psychoanalyzing.
Okay.
Either this is someone who has heard this story, right? Has heard someone tell a story about Paige's abduction.
That, or they're doing like kind of what we're doing.
Right.
Piecing bits together.
Right. And is scared themselves, which is why they wouldn't sign the note. Or, since there were multiple potential perpetrators, it could be one of them who is now having a guilty conscience and...
Yeah, I actually read there were 6 total suspect sketches.
That's a lot.
But only 3 men.
Hmm.
I know. Again, maybe because you're going so fast.
Right, right.
But... we'll get back to the letter because it's like, why this long?
Right.
So Paige's case was actually reopened in the late 1990s because police do end up saying that this is a homicide.
Okay. Well, good.
And they never found the body, but they do say it's a homicide.
Which I guess would be technically hard to do because there's no crime scene.
Right. Yeah. I know. Y'all should see Allison's face. Like, I can see the pearls turning in her brain.
Right, because there's no blood. There's no sign of struggle. There's no...
We just have those eyewitnesses and her vehicle. That's
it. And even then, they didn't see the men actually do anything to her other than potentially walk with her.
Yeah. So, in August of 1990, a United Press International report speculated that a body floating 500 feet north of, like, an arbor that was so hard for me to say just then, in Wisconsin, was Paige, but that actually turned out to be false. So, that's our first, like, false.
Right, false lead.
Yes. And then again, according to the Charlie Project, an unidentified inmate in a Michigan prison was named as a suspect in Paige's case in May of 2001. So we're 11 years post her initial.
Mm-hmm.
The man was in prison for carjacking, and his victim was a young woman. And the crime apparently occurred only weeks after Paige's disappearance. So police kind of speculated that they may have been related. And they interviewed the suspect several times and believed that he was one of the men that spoke with Paige before she went missing, or could have been one of the men, like, in the car, but wasn't actually, like, the person that, like, abducted her.
Right.
But he took a lie detector test and passed, so he was eliminated as a suspect, which, again, we've talked about, makes no sense.
I know.
Because, like, you can't use lie detection tests in court, so...
It's proof of guilt, so how are you using it as proof of innocence?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Right.
But... We don't make those rules.
That's a story for another day.
Yeah, that's a soapbox for another day. So the Rose Church article said that in May of 2002, the Associated Press reported that police, quote, identified 2 suspects in connection with Paige's disappearance. One of those suspects was in prison at the time. The other was 17 at the time of Paige's disappearance, and he actually failed a polygraph test, but I couldn't find, like, what happened because of that.
Right.
That was just kind of the end of that lead. In 2011, authorities began to search a pond in Handy Township using ground-penetrating radar, which we talked about another case that we covered.
Because you said you had to ask Anthony a question about it.
Yeah, because Anthony knows way more things about dirt than what you should
know. It was a woman
know.
Who could have been buried in, like, a parking lot structure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But nothing turns up from that. Like, a woman had reported seeing a pair of cement-covered boots around the time of Paige's disappearance, so they used this ground-penetrating radar, but nothing comes of it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until November 2011 that, using the map they received from this letter, and I don't even remember
when...
What took you so long? That the FBI, state, and local police... search a property in Conway Township. So they even bring in cadaver dogs, but there are no remains found on this property.
So I just looked it back up, and it was 6 months after Paige's disappearance that they got that.
So,
and they're not looking it up until 2011.
Wow. Maybe they're busy.
But here's a question that I don't know. So obviously, I've told you how much I'm in awe of the cadaver dogs and what they're able to do and the ability that they have. But my question to you is this. Because it had been so long between Paige's disappearance and them actually searching this property, you know what I mean? Because, like,
yeah, how did
she
they
disappears.
Even have sense?
Yeah, if she disappears in 1990, right? And they're not searching it until 2011. That's 21 years. Let's say, I guess here's my question. What if the remains used to be there, but then were moved someplace else? What, does the ground lose the scent? Like, if the remains aren't there anymore?
Like, how long does the scent remain in the
right.
area? Plus, I feel like the weather would affect that.
I would think
rain,
so, too.
Weather,
erosion of the soil. And so, I guess I'm wondering if they had actually investigated the map when they had received it, would we still be talking about her case today?
That's true. So, wondering minds want to know.
We have a question for you guys, yeah. 2 pounds each week, too.
Yeah. So, if you know anything about cadaver dogs, how long does a scent stay in a certain area?
Particularly if the remains have been moved.
So, there you go. Because last week, was it last week or week before last, that we issued the wandering minds want to know about the lawyer, mm-hmm. like, client confidentiality and lying when you're, like, you know your client's going to lie.
Right.
And we actually had a sleuth hound, Miss Casey.
Right.
She messaged me back with a very good answer about
right.
that.
And it basically, the answer is, it depends.
Yeah, basically.
So,
all about the wording.
Right, that's right.
It's all about the wording of the questions, for sure.
Yes.
In that same article, it cites how investigators dug 4 holes in one spot in the 7700 block of Sober Road in Conway Township, where cadaver dogs indicated a possible presence of human remains.
Oh.
But, again, that was unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
Despite all of these attempts, police have ruled, like I said, her death a homicide, and now wait for the right pieces to fall into place so Paige can be found and her case solved. So I feel like we, as we went, kind
mm-hmm,
of
mm-hmm.
talked about each one of the theories.
Yeah.
But just again, Allison, I want to know what your theory is.
Okay, I would say of all the theories, I'm more inclined to believe that it was someone impersonating an officer. Only because, as I mentioned before, here Paige has an open container of alcohol in the car. And, like, getting out, having to do something like a sobriety test would be a reason to ask a young woman to get out of the car. Again, if I have someone dressed as an officer, then I'm not going to run out away from them in front of traffic, because then I'm going to get arrested. I'm going to get hit by a car and then arrested.
And probably tased. Right?
Yeah, so I'm out on that. But my hang up on that theory is that we have so many eyewitnesses, and I know we talk about the questionability of the eyewitness counts, and they're seeing all kinds of different stuff. But I didn't hear a single one of them say that they saw someone in an officer's uniform or a police car.
And I don't think I know police are undercover, but a maroon minivan?
Right.
Are you that undercover police officers? Is that something we can know?
Yeah, because, well, I feel like there would have been some indication that this was an officer.
Yeah.
And so that's why, and why would the, I don't know, I would think that the officer would say, you know, please shut off your car or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't, and would have asked for your license.
Yeah, and her wallet was in the car. I did not read if, like, I'm assuming if they didn't take the money, they didn't take her driver. Like, why would
right,
you take her driver's
right,
license?
That's true. So I guess that's where I'm torn on it, but I don't think that she would have run away. I don't know what kind of foul play was involved, but I definitely think there's foul play.
Agree. Paige's family have not given up hope. Her mother spent the remainder of her life fighting to find justice for Paige and to bring peace to her family. Since her mother's death, Paige's sister Michelle has taken over this role of constant reminder to the police that her sister is still missing. Quote, since my mother passed away a year and a half ago, you know someone's got to be the squeaky wheel, Michelle said. We keep in touch with authorities pretty regularly. We have to keep the wheel turning, even though there's not a lot of new information. People still call in after all these years. It's shocking to me how many people still call in after all this time. And how many people, especially with social media now, are following the case. People have moved. People have died along the way. People have retired. Finding some of these people who were interviewed early on is a little tricky. We're urging our investigators to start over, she told Dateline. When there's a missing person, it's different now than 30 years ago. There's DNA and different technical things that you couldn't do 30 years ago, end quote. There have been more than 1,000 tips called into police and billboards erected to bring awareness to Paige's disappearance. And despite all of that, this case is still cold. In an interview with Rose Church, Freyer said, quote, we still believe there's someone out there who knows. It's time for them to do the right thing, and it's time for them to come forth and tell what they know. This family and this young lady deserve justice, end quote. I empathize with Paige because I understand how it feels to finally be figuring life out. At 30, you seem to finally have figured out how to paddle through life, and I can't begin to understand how anyone would rip away someone's life and destroy their family. Paige was adventurous, fun-loving, and trusting. She was loved by her entire family. They've been wandering long enough. It's time we bring them peace. According to the Charlie Project, Paige was last seen in a white silk blouse, baggy silk pants with a multicolored floral pattern, and a long beaded necklace. Paige is a Caucasian female with blonde hair, blue eyes. Paige has a surgical scar on her right leg, a long surgical scar on the inside of her right arm, and a scar on her right elbow. Paige has had two surgical screws inserted into her left knee and her right knee has been replaced. A photo of Paige in these clothes will be posted to our social media page, as well as a suspect sketch and car photos. Michigan Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward of up to $2,500 for any information about Paige's disappearance. Anyone with information on the disappearance of Paige is asked to contact Deputy Investigator Robert J. Getchman of the Livingston County Sheriff's Department at 517-546-2400 or directly at 517-540-7880. You can also text a tip to investigators at 517-546-TIPS. You can also email investigators at coldcasetips@livgov.com. Again, please like and join our Facebook page, Coffee and Cases Podcast, to continue the conversation and see images related to this episode. As always, follow us on Twitter at Cases Coffee, on Instagram at Coffee Cases Podcast, or you can always email us suggestions to coffeeandcasespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about our podcast so more people can be reached to possibly help bring some closure to these families. Don't forget to rate our show and leave us a comment as well. We hope to hear from you soon.
Stay together.
Stay safe.
We'll see you next week.